Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
All I do is come in, be myself, be where I'm supposed to be. The players gonna make it self. All I gotta do is just be in the moment. Cause I'm not Gabe, I'm not Steph, I'm just Keon. And we got a lot of other guys that definitely compliment my game, and we compliment each other's game along with Josh to make things work.
Bills wide receiver Keon Coleman. I'm not Gabe, I'm not Steph, I'm Keon. That'll hit home. It's the right message, I think, for him to be sharing at the moment. Coleman's personality, of course, has shined through since he's been drafted, and we'll see what we're going to get. I'm looking forward to seeing nobody more at training camp than him, and we're 13 days away from that. We did put a poll up on who will lead the Bills' wide receivers. So no tight ends. I think a lot of people would answer Kincaid if we said everybody. Who would lead the Bills' receivers and catches this year? And Sal and I both said Samuel would be our bet. And Josh put a Twitter poll up, and the four options he put up were Samuel, Coleman, Shakir, and then the field. Like anyone else. I mean, I don't really consider it very possible. Like, who would that even be from the field? Mac Hollins.
MVS.
MVS. I mean, I guess Claypool, right, would be... Someone voting the field might think Claypool's the most likely just because of the... Is he the boom or bust guy for them right now? Where if he's on the field, like, hey, man, maybe it's great.
Okay, Joe,
but
if at the end of the year, Chase Claypool, you look up at the stats and he led the Buffalo Bills in wide receivers,
it would be insane.
It's either one of two things. Either, holy cow, what a resurrection project. Give Brandon Bean executive of the year right now, okay? Or, holy cow, the group was not good. I cannot believe they did this.
Yeah.
Like, it would be one of those two things.
I think it would have to be the first one. I think it would, I mean, how bad could it really go? You know, like, it could be bad. I'm not saying it could look like last year at times where it felt like they were constipated as an offense and they couldn't move the ball and guys weren't running open. They found Shakir, their way to him a little bit midway through the season. I just mentioned he was first in the NFL in yards per target once Joe Brady took over, so that got going. Also, James Cook got going, if you want him too, out of the backfield. But man, if Claypool's out there, to me, actually, you know what? If Claypool has led them in catches, I feel like the starting point there is that Keon Coleman hasn't given them what they want. Isn't that the way Claypool gets on the field? Is that Coleman is more raw than they maybe thought, or he's more raw than, you know, fans thought, and he's not on the field all the time?
See, that's the question. If Chase Claypool leads this team, how about this? I don't think he leads the team. Here's the question. If Chase Claypool has more catches than Keon Coleman this year, is it because of Chase Claypool or is it because of Keon Coleman?
It's a tough question to answer, right? Like, I don't know what to expect from either one. I mean, I feel like I know to expect Claypool to be open to maybe there's a resurrection here, but most likely Claypool is what he's been for the last couple of years, which is someone that has trouble getting on the field, that was very, very unproductive in Chicago. And even in Pittsburgh, there were signs at the end that, you know, he wasn't as deserving of all the targets he was getting, but there's an athlete there. There's a big person that can run fast and can jump really high in the air. Coleman, though, I feel like it would have to be more of Coleman isn't performing. Because they're going to give Coleman every benefit of the doubt, I think. I know he's a rookie and second-round pick, although first pick of the second round, so, you know, you'll hear basically a first. We get it. Coleman is the investment. Coleman is part of the plan. Claypool is, hey, we'll see. You know, maybe he makes the team, maybe he doesn't, maybe he gives us something. Like, there's really no downside to Claypool. They're going to want Coleman to work. So if he is showing them signs that he can perform out there, I don't know how many snaps are available then for Claypool to show and to be someone that has more catches than a Keon Coleman. Because I don't think Samuel is ever leaving the field. Or at least, like, he's a regular. Like, he might not play 100% of the snaps, but you know Samuel is going to be a regular part of their offense. You know, I think I know that Shakir is going to be a regular part of their offense. So if you want consistent snaps at the wide receiver position, I feel like you kind of have to beat out Keon Coleman. And I don't know that you're going to have the opportunity to do that if your name's Chase Claypool or Mac Hollins or Valdez Scantling, unless Coleman is just looking really, really raw and not ready for the league.
Right. Yeah, I see, this whole conversation goes back to something we talked about earlier this week, which is he is a rookie. I don't know how much to expect a place on him, right? Like, I know that you want him to hit right away. He's got to be a big part of your offense. The Bills have said he's got to be a big part of the offense. I understand that. How much is too much to expect, right? Like, he's already, I feel like it's almost, and this includes his press conference, his aura, you know, just the kind of the viral video and the attention he's got, the trade with the Chiefs, how the Bills went about it. This all goes into this, Joe, which is at some point, there's got to be a point of you say, look, I mean, That's just too unrealistic. What is that point? That's too unrealistic to expect from him this year. He is a rookie after all, right?
Right.
And I don't know where that point is, but that's going to happen with some people, regardless of the season he has. Unless he has this monster all-pro season, Pro Bowl, like, then anybody in their right mind is going to say, oh my God, he exceeded expectations. I don't expect that. But at what point does it get to where we're going to have a lot of the fan base going, hey, it's a Gabe Davis point, right? You're going to have a lot of the fan base going, hey, that's pretty good. I'll take that. And you're going to have other fans going, no. Second pick, first round, or first pick of the second round. Sorry, he needed to be better than that.
Yeah.
There's going to be a point of that. I don't know what that tipping point is.
His over-under on the sport at the sports books, FanDuel, his over-under is 725 yards, 4.5 touchdowns. Is that enough? He has 720, he hits the over there, 726 yards and 5 touchdowns. Are fans going to feel like that's enough from him to be happy?
That's a really, really good question. I think that should be enough as a rookie in this offense. Now, what's going to happen, though, is if that, like, leads the team, let's say, he'll get his flowers. People will say, okay, that's really good. I'm getting my anger and frustration out of other people. That's fine. But if that's, you know, I think it might depend on what happens with the rest of the field, the rest of the team, and the rest of the stats. That feels like where he should land to me. Those are good numbers to have the over-unders. I think I'd be okay with that. I don't know how much more you can truly want to place on him than that.
I wonder if that sounds low to people when it comes to the touchdowns, right? Like, I would take 725 yards from him in a heartbeat. Like, that is... Last year, you want some of their numbers from last year for context. Dalton Kincaid had 673 yards, so it would be more than Kincaid had as a rookie. Shakir had 611. He didn't play a lot in the first month of the year, but that also could be similar to Coleman. That we'll see about that in camp and preseason, if we're building up to that, or if it looks like he'll play right away. You know, like the year Gabe Davis last year had 746 yards, so it would be about as much as anyone else had a year ago. And if you go back, like if I'm going year to year here, really it's Davis numbers. It would be pretty similar to him having a Davis season, but doing it as a rookie. And that, I think, would leave people feeling pretty good about it. I wonder, though, if touchdowns is a little low there. Because his biggest skill walking into the league, I heard Bulldog make this point yesterday, which I kind of liked, that his biggest issue, it sounds like, coming out of college right now, is his ability to separate. That there's some route running stuff there, and there's some, you know, leverage angles, how you kind of contort your body that needs some cleaning up when he's running routes, and that he had a lot of trouble with that at Florida State. And it's why that's probably his biggest concern coming into the league. So, okay, he's raw, right? He's big athlete, you know, the gauntlet drill speed that we saw. You'd like to think the 40 time can be overcome there when it comes to athleticism, that, okay, this guy can get better at that stuff. This guy can take steps along the way in his career to become maybe not a Diggs-level route runner, but a good route runner when combined with the athleticism and the ability to high point a ball and catch it. Okay, now we're talking about a great wide receiver in the NFL. But is it fair to him to expect that year one, with the combine and with the draft process, it's a busier offseason for these guys than they normally will get from every year after? Is it fair to expect him to have cleaned up his biggest weakness this offseason? He walked out of college as a player that had trouble separating. Should I expect him to walk in the league better at separating? Or is that something that comes more year two, year three, when you got a full offseason to just dive all the way in on that type of stuff?
I think it's too much to expect right away out of the gate. I think he can improve as the year goes on. You'd like to see that. Like, is he going to walk right in and just be this new player? Come on. I mean, what are you asking there, right? I mean, like, come into the league, there's a learning curve. These are the best athletes and people at their positions in the world.
And that's why, right?
You're going against.
Just to add it into that. That's why I never even got to the point. I kind of expect, okay, we're going to use your strengths more in year one. We'll work on the weaknesses as we go. You're right to point out that could get better as the season goes on. So I'm thinking touchdowns for him. Like, that's the thing he doesn't have to work on, is you got a contested catch, or we're in the red zone and we got tight space down there. We've got to throw the ball to someone we know is going to come down with it. And who's that guy? Like, that's the thing Keon Coleman is great at. So I would think you rely on the strengths of the rookie more because you just haven't had as much time to clean up the weaknesses. So to me, like, 4.5 touchdowns, like, that's the number I'd want to see be higher. Like, I don't mind if he only has 500, 600 yards this year even. But seven, eight touchdowns? Like, I don't think that's unreasonable to think he could have this year.
Be nice. I'd like that. That's not unreasonable. It's actually good. Yes. Eight touchdowns, you said?
Eight touchdowns. I think that's I don't know if I want to call it an expectation. I might want to say like 6 or 7 at least, though. Like, I would go over on that touchdown number that the books have, and I would go under probably on the yards and the receptions, just because.
Dude, eight touchdowns is what Stephon Diggs had to lead the team last year.
Right. Right. I guess
Diggs had 11 the year before. The next best was Gabe Davis at 7.
Yeah. I guess we could get into the weeds on this too while we're on it. Like, what is their red zone game plan going to look like? Josh Allen had 15 rushing touchdowns last year. I don't know how many of those were from the one. I'm sure a good chunk of them. Maybe not like more than 4 or 5, though.
Yeah, so I was on a San Diego radio station, actually, the other morning.
Okay.
And they asked me, inevitably, we go on these radio stations around the country, Joe, we get asked about the Bills.
Yep.
What's one question you always get asked? How much will Josh Allen do? Are they going to back off him, tell him not to run as much? It's just always the thing that's talked about, right?
Yep.
It's kind of the low-hanging fruit to ask any Bills observer, Bills analyst about Josh Allen running the ball, right, and where he is and that part of his career, no doubt. And that's okay. I'm not criticizing that question because I think it's fair and it's valid, but it always gets asked. And my answer to them was, look, they tried a little bit to rein Josh Allen in last year. It kind of didn't work. And when it did happen, he made some decisions you don't want him to make. Like, you'd rather see him run. Remember the first Monday night game, right? Run the ball. Don't throw the ball in the harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, that happened. Brandon Bean said recently, and I think it was the Ty Dunn piece that he sat down with Brandon Bean. Mm-hmm. At Go Long TD, by the way. Really nice job that Ty did there. I think Brandon Bean had said, if I remember right, something like, we want him to be Josh Allen and do what he does. I feel like this year, and this is my answer to the San Diego question when I was on with them, I said, I think you're going to see him be even like more emboldened to be what he needs to be and wants to be as a runner. It's just they need him to be smart. And that's the thing they've always preached to him. Be smart. You don't have to leap over guys in the second quarter of a week four game, right? But man, you get down to crunch time, you need those yards. Hey, we understand. What I did also say, though, was, however, I feel like he's not going to be the runner in the red zone or goal line that we've seen, because that's why they've kind of gone to, hey, we need to get a guy like Ray Davis. They had Leonard Fournette last year that they didn't necessarily get to, but they've wanted to have that kind of guy. Damian Harris winds up getting hurt, right? I feel like they've wanted to, and maybe this year they'll maybe get to it where we don't need to rely on Josh down in the red zone and the goal line area as much, because there's a lot of bodies down there and it's really compact. Yes, we can, and he's really good at it, but maybe that's where the running and the touchdowns get taken away a little bit.
Okay. And last year, 15, I just looked this up, 15 touchdowns last year, 6 of them were from the 1 yard line.
Right.
So
now if you're at the 1, I think it's a little different than the 3 or the 4 or the 5. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
if you're at the 1, you're doing the tush push, the Bills version of it, whatever it is. I think that's a little different.
Yeah.
I'm talking about when you're in the red zone,
right,
and running the ball, when you're in those shorter, compact areas, but you still have a little ways to go for a touchdown.
Yeah. They actually specifically here on Stathead show two where it was. So one of those from the 1 says Allen went around the right tackle. So that might have been a scramble. And then all the other ones, though, like that's like 9 or 10 touchdowns that they were in the red zone. And like, he against Philly, he scored from 11 out. Against Tampa, he scored from 12 out. Miami, 10. Washington, 10. Mm-hmm. Philly, 9. Denver, 6. Kansas City, 6. Like, there are a lot of plays here. There are a lot of scores where
those are scrambles, right?
Like, yes, I think so.
So he's deciding in those moments, I have to take off and run here.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't think you can ever take that away from Josh, right? You don't want to take that out of him. He has to do that. He has to do that. And I don't think they want to do that this year. I don't know. I mean, how many times did they actually even call running plays for him last year? Maybe it was a lot less, I guess. Didn't we talk about that? That was the funny thing. And I brought this up with the San Diego station. I said, believe it or not, I said, here, everybody talks about he shouldn't run so much. We were screaming for him to run more in Buffalo through the first 5 or 6 weeks.
Well, it changed, right? Like, didn't it?
Yes.
For some people. Like, for me, I never needed to see him stop running, because I've always been locked into a position of, I just don't get why people think running is so much more vulnerable for the quarterback, when we have so many studies that show that the injury rate is not higher. And I don't even think logically it makes sense, because the point I always make is, how is he safer standing in the middle of 9 300-pound people that could fall at any moment in any which direction than one-on-one with a 180-pound cornerback, or a linebacker even, if you want to make it that. So I never needed to see him stop running in the first place. But I bet, if I remember this right, that even those that thought, okay, we need to take some off his plate, we don't want to see him get hit as much, so let's kind of cool it on the running, that once the season really got rolling and they looked the way they did and he wasn't running the ball, I think there was a notion of, okay, well, we got to bring that back. Like, they miss that. They need it. They need it more than maybe you want them to need it, but they need it. And they eventually did do it. I remember the Tampa game thinking You know, they're act. I don't know what they did, but they're acting like they heard everybody's complaints because that first drive against the Bucs on Thursday Night Football last year, they had not called, I think, maybe a single design run all year. I'm looking it up now. And that game, they maybe called like three on the first drive for Josh Allen. They walked down the field and scored. So here it is. Last year, Pro Football Focus, scrambles versus designed runs. He had through the first 7 weeks of the season, he had three designed runs and like 20 scrambles. And on the season, he had 111 scrambles and 50 designed runs. So, I mean, okay, so they started going on it a little bit as the season went on. But I feel like that's probably down from where you might think it normally would be. So Allen running, yeah, like we started on Coleman here in like the red zone.
Right.
Red zone, though,
well,
like there's so many options, right? Like Allen running is probably your best play, but Coleman with the jump balls and Kincaid, I think we think is a red zone target too, don't we?
Yeah, I think you to answer your question, what does red zone football look like for the Bills? I think we're going to see both Kincaid and Knox on the field more, and I think Claypool's on the field, and now you have options, and you can do different things both schematically and have different options to throw to.
Yeah. 803-0550 is the phone number. That poll, by the way, that Josh put up at WGR, 49% think Shakir is going to lead their wide receivers and targets this year. Samuel after that at 27%. The field at 13 is above Coleman at 10. I don't know about that one. I can't. We talked about it a little bit earlier. I don't know how Coleman would just, to me, have to not look right at all for someone else, MVS, Claypool to get up there. Maybe it's not as ridiculous as I'm making it sound, but Coleman right now is in last on this poll, at least, with 600 votes so far. 803-0550 is the phone number if you've got a thought on this. Couple of other things to get to when we come back. We've got Alexa Ross coming up at 8 o'clock. I want to make a correction on the Uruguay Colombia like fan player brawl yesterday. There's actually maybe a very defendable reason why the Uruguay players went in the crowd last night. So we won't do too much on that, but just quick note on that when we come back. Jody Biasi, Sal Capaccio, this is WGR.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one. Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame.
Two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly, beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Right now, of Uruguayan players going into the stands and interacting, if you will, with Colombian supporters. You obviously see things being thrown, including fists and punches and beverages and garbage. And unfortunate scenes in Charlotte, that after the final whistle right now of Uruguayan players.
So that was after the match last night. That was a big story in the sports world, was the Uruguay players going into the stands. Brought back a lot of memories for people, I think, of Malice at the Palace. I saw a lot of people tweeting about that. They might have actually had a very good reason, though, for going in, if they're being truthful, which is that there was not a lot of security there at that game last night, and that their families were getting pelted with things by Colombian fans. So they went into the crowd basically to defend their families, is basically what they're saying. You know, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that's their defense. If that's true, then, you know, I'm not going to, you know, rant and rave about them doing it. They didn't also, like, it was not like Ron Artest and Stephen Jackson, like, knocking people out. Like, they very much looked like they were in a defensive pose. So that was a big story last night. Would obviously remember Malice at the Palace and the reaction to that, right?
I do. I was living in Florida at the time. I remember that night. Yeah, it had to be in November, I think. We were at a high school playoff game, I think, the night it happened. Might have been a Friday night. And, I remember watching it, like, on TV, and holy cow. And then there was a really... Have you seen the documentary on it? The Malice...
Yeah.
That was pretty interesting.
My favorite part of that, I think, is... I think Stephen Jackson is telling the story of they get back to the locker room, the Pacers, after everything has just happened. The fight's out on the court, going into the stands, they're getting, you know, they're probably covered in beer at that point because the fans were throwing things. And I love how Stephen Jackson tells the story in that he sits down in the locker room after, next to Ron Artest. Their jerseys are, like, torn apart to shreds. And then Artest... The first thing he says to Jackson when they're in the locker room, he turns to Artest, like straight out of a comedy movie, is, "So you think we're going to get in trouble for this? You think we're going to get in trouble for this?"
Wild.
Was his first question. And weren't they, like, banned for the year? Probably.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact fallout. There was a lot of discipline handed out.
Yeah. 803-0550 is the phone number. So I mentioned when we went to break that Shakir's winning our poll for the most catches Bills fans expect this year.
Interesting.
Which, like, I don't think is impossible at all. Like, I think it's part of the realistic outcomes, I think, for sure, is that Shakir leads their wide receivers in catches. I wonder, though, is that too much over the middle of the field? Is that too busy there? Because if we think Kincaid is going to be a monster part of this offense, which I do, Shakir's the slot receiver. Like, one thing about, maybe this should be a factor, that, you know, when comparing what he could do to what Beasley did in this offense, playing a very similar position, is Beasley had Dawson Knox, but Dawson Knox was not commanding 100 targets over the middle of the field. Like, how much room is there for a slot receiver to have 100 targets and 80 to 85 catches on a team where the tight end might lead the team?
It's a good question. You know, one thing that I'm thinking about when you're talking about that is, boy, when they had Beasley, right? Like, it just, you know, we could talk a lot about the guys they've had or haven't had, but
yeah.
Doesn't it feel like they've just been missing that, right? Like, what he brought.
They probably thought so. They brought him back 2 years ago.
Yes. And I think that's been the vision for Dalton Kincaid in a different way. In fact, when Dalton Kincaid was drafted, Brandon Bean talked about him being like a Cole Beasley in a different body type.
Right. Yeah, he did. And didn't Beasley... Beasley, maybe it wasn't that comment. Beasley had something to say about... maybe it was calling Kincaid a wide receiver, or he runs routes like a wide receiver was maybe the thing he had had a problem with.
But I guess the overall point for me is, Joe, man, if they can get back to, if they can find, it doesn't have to look like Cole Beasley, it doesn't have to be Cole Beasley, right? Mm-hmm. But if they can find someone to be able to work the middle of the field the way Cole Beasley was able to work the middle of the field, and that has to come from Kincaid. Now, you can throw Shakir in there. I just don't think he's that kind of player. He might be a nice slot receiver, and he can do some things in there. He is not that type of shifty player like a Cole Beasley is. Even at his size, yeah, Dalton Kincaid can be like that, I think. If they can find that kind of player, oh my God, I think that has been what really has been missing from this offense.
Well, that's good. Like, how gettable is that when you don't have a Diggs? You know what I mean? Like, do you want your leading receiver being that way? I know Kincaid will do more things for you than a Beasley did, because I think the role we're talking about is, like, what do you think of with Cole Beasley? It's third and four, and I gotta get the first down. And he was just rock solid in that spot, right? Like, quick little route that he's gonna find the empty space. He's gonna sit down in that area, and Allen's gonna find him. The chemistry was there completely as long as those guys were playing together. Like, Beasley was good at what he was good at, and he didn't really need to do anything else and would put up a giant season. That 2020 year, when the Bills were humming, statistically, it is their best season. Most of their players, like, it's Allen's best year statistically, it was Diggs' best year statistically, and it was Beasley's with 967 yards playing a role where you just never see him run routes down the field. You're right to point out Shakir is like a different player, and he even runs routes a little differently, right? Like, it's a different style of athlete than Beasley was.
Shakir can play outside. Like, Cole Beasley can never play outside. You know
right.
What I mean?
Even though it might only be a little bit, like, Beasley couldn't do it at all, really.
Right. And what I mean by that is, like, because of his, he's not a pure just slot receiver.
Yeah.
Get to a certain spot and turn around. Like, Beasley, Brandon Bean has talked about this, and I like the way he describes it. Like, there's, like, not many guys as good as Cole Beasley at the top of the route. That's where the difference is. When you get to the top of the route and you can turn around and go a certain way, being able to understand where that is and how to do it with your body and be in position to make the catch in all aspects, that's the difference. Like, when you think about a slot receiver, don't think of a slot receiver. I'm saying this to all the fans that you kind of have it in their mind, like, what that should look like. There, you can run to a spot. You can always run to a spot. Like, you say, okay, like, you're going to the middle of the field, you're running down the seam, whatever. At some point, most slot receivers are going to have a shorter route, usually, than anybody on the outside, usually. So when you get to that spot, it's what you do when you get there and you turn around and you understand how to maneuver yourself to the left or the right of a defender or in that spot and then turn around, see the quarterback, move left, move right, all of those things. That's what Cole Beasley's great at. It's not just getting to a spot. It's once you get there, what do you do to make yourself available for the quarterback? That's what made him special, Joe.
Yeah. And there's a nuance to that that you might think Kincaid will get better at after his rookie season, right? I mean, you would hope so. That's some of the stuff you're talking about is what I think of for Kelce and Mahomes, right?
Yes, 100%.
And they are so 100%. Dialed in with each other on that front all the time.
Yes.
It's maybe the number one reason Kelce puts up the numbers he does. I mean, he's a great athlete. He's an all-time great, but, I mean, that's what it is. And you want Kincaid to give you that. I mean, really, yeah. I know our poll's about wide receivers. It's maybe wrong to keep comparing to, like, especially that 2020 Bills offense that had monster numbers all over the place. They just have different players. They have different styles of players. Right, like, they don't really have a guy like Diggs right now. They're trying to, I think they're going to effort to recreate the Diggs production in a different way. I think you're kind of pointing to, well, Beasley too. Beasley was second on that team in receiving in every category except touchdowns. And they are maybe trying to recreate his production, but, you know, in a different body type for Beasley. So You know, like maybe this is a trap sometimes of like, hey, you got to replace Diggs with a Diggs. You got to replace Beasley with a Beasley. You got to replace John Brown with a John Brown. And the Bills currently have a fleet of weapons that, you know, back to Coleman's comment yesterday, it's kind of a cliche for him to just say like, well, I'm not Gabe, I'm not Steph, I'm Keon, but I guess that kind of is their receiving room. Like, Curtis Samuel is not like any receiver they've had. And Coleman, I think I want to say, maybe he's closer to Davis, but because of the jump ball ability and yards after catch, now I think I want to say Coleman, too, is a receiver that they haven't really had before. And Kincaid, you know, similarly, like, he's a type of tight end they haven't had before. So I guess the overall point there is, you want them to have the same numbers and them to be as good as that Bills offense that looked unstoppable a couple of years ago. But the types of receivers they have right now are very different types than what they had then.
Right. And this whole receiving core has been kind of the vision, the build here without Diggs and Davis is to have a lot of guys who can do all these different things, right? Like, even Curtis Samuel. Like, Curtis Samuel's a former running back, right? We know that. We went over his carries.
Yep.
Curtis Samuel can play outside, he can play inside. Is he Cole Beasley? No, of course not. But he's the kind of receiver that if you have to put him in the slot because you have a certain formation and say, you know what, that's a good matchup, and we could take advantage of this linebacker here with Curtis Samuel and get him the ball early in the down, like, that's what they're trying to go to. They're trying to go to, and I've tried to explain to, again, when people say, like, hey, what is happening here? No Diggs, no Davis. The Bills have tried to build an offense where when a defensive coordinator walks into a meeting room on Tuesday or Wednesday with his players for a game plan, he can't just put the Bills offense up on a board with names and say, this is where they're going to line up and this is how we're going to defend them. What they're trying to do is, when that defensive coordinator walks into a room, Joe, he's going to say, look, guys, we don't know where these guys are going to line up. We better be ready for him over here and him over here and him over here. And then five plays later, they're going to completely switch it up. Like, that's what I think they're trying to do.
803-0550 is the phone number. Shakir leading that poll we put up. Who's going to lead the Bills receivers, wide receivers, in catches this year? When we come back, there's a college football coach that said something I thought was insane. When we come back, I want to get Sal's take on the reaction to Mike Gundy having an interesting comment yesterday in the world of college football. Also, there's something on the video game that I want to point out as well, which is coming up. Ooh, when does the video game come out? I think it's the 15th. I should know this because it's like a national holiday to college football fans that grew up playing that game and hasn't been out for 10 years. It's Jody Biasi, Sal Capaccio. 8 o'clock, Alexa Ross will join us on the Colts and Caitlin Clark as well. But Indy on the Bills schedule this year, and they've got a lot of question marks. So we'll get to that at 8 here on WGR.
Where are we at in society today? Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
Ah, Mike Gundy. He'll always be remembered for that. One thing about that, by the way, that is not the clip from yesterday. Go on.
You know when that was, him saying that?
I'm a man, I'm 40. I mean, it probably was at least a decade, right?
Yeah, it's 16 years ago. He's 56.
16 years ago, yeah.
It's amazing. I think about that. I remember that. It was great. I remember when that happened, when it came out and when he said it. And I'm thinking, like, this. He's like, I'm a man, I'm 40. I'm like, he's 56 now.
Yeah. I have a buddy who is a huge Oklahoma State fan that will always point out to me that he was actually about to get fired potentially when he had that rant, and that rant, the defense of his player, like, really went a long way for him and helped him keep his job.
Oh yeah,
and he's been there ever since.
Joe, he's got to be one of the longest tenured. I don't know this for off the top of my head. Longest tenured coaches in college football. He's been the head coach at Oklahoma State since 2005.
Ooh.
19 years. 20 years. Going into his 20th year.
Could he be the longest? I'm looking right now. He's... Okay, there's only one that goes further than he does. Kirk Ferentz.
Okay. Iowa. Makes sense. Yeah.
1999.
Crazy, right?
And then Kyle Whittingham and Mike Gundy. Kyle Whittingham from Utah and then Mike Gundy were both hired in 2005. So yeah, they're the longest tenured. Is he still going to be longest tenured? I mean, I don't think he's getting fired, but he said something I think is pretty dumb yesterday. So his star player, Ollie Gordon, who is, he might not be the Heisman favorite, but he's one of the favorites to win the Heisman this year, star running back. Ollie Gordon gets caught and arrested with, I think, DUI, right? Yeah, DUI. Legal limit for him, Gordon, is zero because he's 20. And he was caught swerving and speeding with 0.11 blood alcohol content and open vodka and tequila containers in the car. So that happened to Ollie Gordon. He did that. I don't want to say that happened to him. And then his coach went on television and did this.
So I looked it up on my phone. What would be the legal limit? Like in Oklahoma is 0.08 and Ollie was 0.1. So I looked it up and it was based on body weight, not to get into the legal side of it, but I thought really two or three beers or four. I'm not justifying what Ollie did. I'm telling you what decision I made. Well, I thought I've probably done that 1,000 times in my life. And I, you know, it was just fine. So I got lucky. People get lucky. Ollie made a decision that he wished he could have done better. But when I talked to Ollie, I told him, I said, you're lucky you got out.
All right. I mean, am I wrong? Is him saying the words, I don't even know if they're really that out of context. I've probably done that 1,000 times. One of the dumbest things a coach has ever said.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible. It's a horrible message. It's a, I mean, fine, you want to make an admission and be like, hey, I'm really sorry I've done that, in whatever context that is. But for him to say that in this particular circumstance especially is ridiculous and awful.
Totally agree. I mean, I don't know. Did he lose his job over it? Is it that bad? I know that's being discussed right now in, you know, college football circles. It's July. There's not a lot going on. But, I mean, you know, not a lot going on. That would get headlines any time of the year, I think, if a coach said that. Because it is so stupid. And you're right. Like, the message of it, as someone that is trusted to be a leader of men, or a leader of kids, really, is going up there and giving that message, just, man, I don't know. That's really bad. And again, like, he even is kind of trying to play it off like, oh, who hasn't had a couple of beers? And it wasn't just that he was above the legal limit. That's not even his own legal limit, because his legal limit is zero. It's that he had open containers in the car of liquor.
Okay.
I don't know.
So, wait. So, I do want to say, I'm reading the story a little bit.
Yeah.
He tried to clarify, okay, apparently, from what I'm reading here, and I don't know, he tried to clarify that he wasn't specifically referencing I drank and then drove 1,000 times in my life after, you know, 3 or 4 beers.
Uh-huh.
What he was trying to say was the big picture of, I've made bad decisions 1,000 times in my life.
Okay.
It does not sound like that, though.
It doesn't sound like it. Yeah, it doesn't sound like that. Either way, and then also, it's not in that clip. I think maybe this was even in a different interview. He kind of got asked by the media, like, okay, so is there going to be internal punishment for Gordon, the star running back? Is there going to be internal punishment from you and from the school for him? And his response to that was, I want to find the exact quote before I say it exactly, and now I'm not able to find it. Basically, though, it was along the lines of, here we go. This is the exact quote. I think it's best for Ollie to play. If there's any punishment, it's making him carry the ball 50 times in the first game.
Oh, geez. You're making it worse.
Right? That's even worse. That's not even worse. Doing? But it's so bad. It's so bad. So, Mike Gundy's having, you know, tough time putting out a message about his star running back. I mean, it would be bad enough for him to not be punished at all, but right, like, the things he is saying to justify it are even more insane. That's for the Oklahoma State head football coach. 803-0550 is the phone number. If you've got a thought on our Bills wide receiver conversation from earlier, we're going to change gears, though, when we come back. Alexa Ross, one of our favorites, is going to join on the Colts. Indy has a young quarterback that's really interesting in Anthony Richardson that we didn't get to see a lot of, and they made some changes this offseason. So nothing major, but, you know, a couple of different signings. And Caitlin Clark. She covers Caitlin Clark, and she just had a monster game. So we'll check in on how that's going in the WNBA in her season, which didn't start great, but it feels like it's getting a lot better in recent weeks. So all that ahead, Alexa Ross, when we come back here on WGR.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one. Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Where are we at in society today? Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
Mike Gundy. He'll always be remembered for that. One thing about that, by the way, that is not the clip from yesterday. Go on.
You know when that was? Him saying that?
I'm a man, I'm 40. I mean, it probably was at least a decade, right?
Yeah, it's 16 years ago. He's 56.
16 years ago. Yeah.
It's amazing. I think about that. I remember that. It was great. I remember when that happened, when it came out and when he said it. And I'm thinking, like, this. He's like, I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm like, he's 56 now.
Yeah. I have a buddy who is a huge Oklahoma State fan that will always point out to me that he was actually about to, the story goes that he was about to get fired, potentially, when he had that rant, and that rant, the defense of his player, like, really went a long way for him and helped him keep his job.
Oh, yeah.
And he's been there ever since.
Joe, he's got to be one of the longest tenured, I don't know this for off the top of my head, longest tenured coaches in college football. He's been the head coach at Oklahoma State since 2005.
Ooh.
19 years, 20 years, going into his 20th year.
Could he be the longest? I'm looking right now. He's, okay, there's only one that goes further than he does. Kirk Ferentz.
Okay, Iowa. Makes sense. Yeah.
1999.
Crazy, right?
And then Kyle Whittingham and Mike Gundy. Kyle Whittingham from Utah, and then Mike Gundy were both hired in 2005. So, yeah. They're the longest tenured. Is he still going to be longest tenured? I mean, I don't think he's getting fired, but he said something I think is pretty dumb yesterday. So, his star player, Ollie Gordon, who is, he might not be the Heisman favorite, but he's one of the favorites to win the Heisman this year. Star running back. Ollie Gordon gets caught and arrested with, I think, DUI, right? Yeah, DUI. Legal limit for him, Gordon, is zero because he's 20. And he was caught swerving and speeding with 0.11 blood alcohol content in open vodka and tequila containers in the car. So that happened to Ollie Gordon. He did that. I don't want to say that happened to him. And then his coach went on television and did this.
So I looked it up on my phone. What would be the legal limit? Like in Oklahoma is 0.08 and Ollie was 0.1. So I looked it up and it was based on body weight, not to get into the legal side of it, but I thought really two or three beers or four. I'm not justifying what Ollie did. I'm telling you what decision I made. Well, I thought I've probably done that 1,000 times in my life. And I, you know, it was just fine. So I got lucky. People get lucky. Ollie made a decision that he wished he could have done better. But when I talked to Ollie, I told him, I said, you're lucky you got out.
All right. I mean, am I wrong? Is him saying the words, I don't even know if they're really that out of context. I've probably done that 1,000 times. One of the dumbest things a coach has ever said.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible. It's a horrible message. It's a, I mean, fine, you want to make an admission and be like, hey, I'm really sorry, I've done that, in whatever context that is. But for him to say that in this particular circumstance especially is ridiculous and awful.
Totally agree. Totally agree. I mean, I don't know. Did he lose his job over it? Is it that bad? I know that's being discussed right now in, you know, college football circles. It's July. There's not a lot going on. But, I mean, you know, not a lot going on. That would get headlines any time of the year, I think, if a coach said that. Because it is so stupid. And you're right. Like, the message of it, as someone that is trusted to be a leader of men, or a leader of kids, really, is going up there and giving that message, just, man, I don't know. That's really bad. And, again, like, he even is kind of trying to play it off like, oh, who hasn't had a couple of beers? And it wasn't just that he was above the legal limit. That's not even his own legal limit, because his legal limit is zero. It's that he had open containers in the car of liquor.
Okay.
I don't know.
So, wait a minute. So, I do want to say, I'm reading the story a little bit.
Yeah.
He tried to clarify, okay, apparently, from what I'm reading here, and I don't know, he tried to clarify that he wasn't specifically referencing I drank and then drove 1,000 times in my life after, you know, 3 or 4 beers.
Uh-huh.
What he was trying to say was the big picture of, I've made bad decisions 1,000 times in my life.
Okay.
It does not sound like that, though.
It doesn't sound like it. Yeah, it doesn't sound like that. Either way, and then also, it's not in that clip. I think maybe this was even in a different interview. He kind of got asked by the media, like, okay, so is there going to be internal punishment for Gordon, the star running back? Is there going to be internal punishment from you and from the school for him? And his response to that was, I want to find the exact quote before I say it exactly, and now I'm not able to find it. Basically, though, it was along the lines of, here we go. This is the exact quote. I think it's best for Ollie to play. If there's any punishment, it's making him carry the ball 50 times in the first game.
Oh, geez. You're making it worse.
Right? That's even worse. That's, I mean, not what, even what worse, doing? But it's so bad. It's so bad. So Mike Gundy's having, you know, tough time putting out a message about his star running back. I mean, it would be bad enough for him to not be punished at all, but right, like, the things he is saying to justify it are even more insane. That's for the Oklahoma State head football coach. 803-0550 is the phone number. If you've got a thought on our Bills wide receiver conversation from earlier, we're going to change gears, though, when we come back. Alexa Ross, one of our favorites, is going to join on the Colts. Indy has a young quarterback that's really interesting in Anthony Richardson that we didn't get to see a lot of, and they made some changes this offseason. So nothing major, but, you know, a couple of different signings. And Caitlin Clark, she covers Caitlin Clark, and she just had a monster game. So we'll check in on how that's going in the WNBA in her season, which didn't start great, but it feels like it's getting a lot better in recent weeks. So all that ahead, Alexa Ross, when we come back here on WGR.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style.
you get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.